Welcome back to Mike and Maurice's Mind Escape. Let us help you escape your mind.
Episode number 219 tonight, Mysteries and Metaphysics 4.4. So we're going to discuss all the miscellaneous megalithic structures and ancient sites that we've kind of discussed a little bit in the past before on this podcast. Again, this series is to discuss the Mysteries and Metaphysics series, to discuss things that we, you know, the way we thought about some of these things when we started the podcast versus how we think about them now 4 years later and the evolutions of our thoughts on them and everything. But before we get started tonight, head on over to our Patreon at patreon.com/mindescapepodcast. For just $2 a month, you'll get exclusive guest episodes and segments. We are also on Discord. If you're interested, though, the $2 a month, you'll get access to a whole catalog of exclusive stuff. I mean, I just uploaded stuff with Rick Strassman, Matthew Clark, where we discussed Eleusinian mysteries. Laura, the Megalith Hunter, she has an amazing channel on YouTube if you haven't checked it out already. Laird Scranton, so there's a bunch of stuff up there as well as just stuff from years past. So again, if you're interested, it's just $2 a month. Also head on over to Indra's Web. IndrasWeb.org is the social media platform we created to connect open minds. So whether you want to speculate, hypothesize, theorize, it's the perfect place to do it. Go sign up for a profile. And we are still working on trying to get it in the App Store. I will let you know when that happens. We are going to give away this beautiful Mind Escape t-shirt at the end of the month. So if you're interested in winning that, all you have to do is go to Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star review, take a screenshot of it, and then email it to mindescapepodcast@gmail.com, and that will enter you to win. We do have a few submissions, but if you enter, there's a pretty decent chance that you know, might win. So please go do that. And one more thing before we get started. We have a ton of merch designs now up in our TeePublic merch store. So if you're interested, go to mindescapepodcast.com. Click on the merch tab. It will take you there. I just threw up a new design with Anubis with the thing saying "We are living, breathing magic" above it. It's actually a pretty cool design. And I've done all the artwork for those, so go check those out. There's also a hashtag Let Maurice Speak t-shirt on there.
Yeah, baby.
And some other cool stuff, so go check that out. The link is also down below. But what's going on, Maurice? How are you?
I'm doing, my friend. How are you?
I'm okay. Just so everybody knows, I will be having, my wife and I are having our first child here in the next week, so we're just pre-recording a bunch of episodes. This will be the last live episode we do for a while until I figure that out. So, you know, we will have podcasts coming out weekly, but they will not be live for a while. I just wanted to let everybody know that. And yeah, so tonight we do have a slideshow episode prepared. So if people are interested, if you're listening, I'll try and make it as interesting as possible. But again, we do have a YouTube channel where we do live shows. So if you have not subscribed to our YouTube channel, please do so. And I will also put the link in there if you were listening on an audio platform. So let's get started.
Let's go, baby.
Mysteries and Metaphysics 4.4. So I thought we would go over some basic stuff. We just recently had Laura Taboni on, and she is the Megalith Hunter, where she lives on Malta. She makes these awesome videos on Malta. And when we had her on, we discussed, you know, the Maltese history and the evolution of the megalithic structures and sites. Here's a table where you can kind of see the evolution there. The Neolithic from 5000 to 4100 BC. Gihar Dalam, that is, I believe it's a cave, like a man-made cave, or I guess like a an augmented cave, if you will, from about 5000 to 4500 BC. And then, you know, there's some of the more popular style sites that you've seen in pictures and stuff, which is from the temple period, 4100 to 2500 BC. Emjar, 3800 to 3600 BC, Gigantea, 3600 to 3000 BC, Safliani, 3300, Targin, 3000, and it just goes on from there. So I just wanted to show that table so people have a general idea. And before Göbekli Tepe, Malta was considered one of the older sites in terms of megalithic structures before we found Göbekli Tepe. So,
and if you're what will be the next we find?
And if you're interested in Göbekli Tepe, I think Mysteries of Metaphysics 4.1, we did a slideshow on a lot of the T-pillars at Göbekli Tepe. So if you find that interesting, go check that out. Okay, so here we have Imnajra. You can see that kind of that lentil there. Lots, you know, we were discussing when Laura was on, is that decorative or do those little indentations have some sort of meaning? I do not know. But yeah, I find it interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, they're like pits.
Yeah. Yeah, like some sort of pitting happening, some technique. And we kind of speculated what that could be. Yeah, and if you're interested in the Malta sites, go check out our two episodes with Laura, the Megalith Hunter. There's part one and part two. So.
And then you can grab onto her page and really dive in.
Yeah, she's got a great take on a lot of the stuff. And she obviously she lives on the island, so she's able to like go hiking and check these sites out. So
right in the thick of things.
I keep bringing her up because I really think she's onto something, and I hope everybody goes and subscribes to her channel. So let's see here. Then you get to Hajar Hakim. There you can see there's some of those little holes that we were discussing before too, on the front end of it. She doesn't know what some of those are for. We were discussing like rituals and the purpose of some, and the functionality of some of these things, and there's just not a whole lot of answers. So some of these sites are so old, it's, you know, you'd be speculating at this point. So the Harzarkim spirals here, same thing. You got a little bit of that pitting design with two spirals. Those spirals actually look similar to the spirals found at like Newgrange, some of the Neolithic and megalithic sites in Europe. Newgrange is in Ireland. Kind of interesting. And you see some of those spirals as associated with like ancient cosmology as well, at some of these sites. Let's see here. Here you have an image of Gigantea, or Gigantesia. You see they almost look like altars, or you see those lintels going across the tops of those, and then you have these giant stones in between separating them. I mean, just looking at that, what would you think, Maurice?
What do you mean in regards to what?
Like, what do you think that could be? Just like an altar, or?
Man. I don't, it's tough. I don't know. Is that the only option? Is an altar?
No, I mean it could be anything. I guess I'm just curious what you thought it was. Maybe I don't know.
It's You see
some like cyclopean masonry along the edges there. So I will move on.
How tall are those little?
That's a good question. I would say, I mean, they look like they're in between 4 to 6 feet tall, but maybe that's just the perspective. Maybe they are taller.
I don't know. I don't know if people would go and stand under there or something. And you laugh at me, man?
No. I'm not laughing.
I don't know. What else could the thing be? You know, it's very strange. Unless it could just be a piece of art. It could be as simple as that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's not a bad art.
Like I'm from Detroit. You go down to Hart Plaza. There's a big ring. There's all kinds of stuff actually. But
right.
People could stare at them and go, "What did they use that for?"
Yeah, I mean, here in Chicago, we have that massive bean. You know.
Right. Right.
That's not a bad way to look at it, actually. Some sort of evolution from cave art to artistic megalithic sites.
Yeah, it just depends on how developed the mind was, and that's obviously one thing that separates us from animals is the ability to make art and like laugh and things like that. So
yeah,
we believe it's a higher form of consciousness. It's just how developed were these people back then? I have to believe that there was some kind of art influence.
Sure.
I don't know.
Not bad. Not bad. I'll accept it.
All right.
Yeah. Tarjean, you have this mother goddess bottom. It looks like instead of, you know, some sort of like legs, you have actual anthropomorphic style legs to human looking feet holding up a block, which is kind of interesting. And then some sort of like lines going down there, which obviously holds some sort of symbolism, maybe like the bottom of some sort of clothing or something like that, some artistic style of like a style, like that was the style back then, maybe, who knows.
Yeah.
Interesting though. And keep it moving here.
And what do the scholars like to say, or do they just...
Well, I mean, go back to the episode we do with Laura. She mentions and she says that she has kind of a different take on it as opposed to like the normal sacred feminine, you know, feminine, or like the you know, these Venus style goddesses of the ancient world. She said it might be different than that. There might be something even, you know, more bizarre happening. Who knows?
But like the enclosure we're looking at now, there's obviously a hole, and so that could be used to frame something very special, or it could be used as a passage, almost as like a superstition type of thing, where you, they say like if you go under a bridge,
so this stuff Ta, like that. Hagrat and Emjar,
yeah,
that looks like, I mean, that one block on that lintel block looks pretty, and if anybody doesn't know what a lintel is, it's like the cross section top way of a doorway. It's like a big stone or some sort of beam that goes across. That's what a lintel is. But yeah, it looks pretty like crude, right? It doesn't look like it's been really worked or anything like that.
Absolutely not.
But
it could be chipped and it could be decayed.
Yeah. Could be.
All that stuff looks a little bit eroded. So
yeah, that's why I was asking Laura about that too, because, you know, Malta is somewhat of a smaller island, and you have the sea and winds.
Yeah.
And you know, you're in the middle of it, and we know wind erosion can do, wind and water erosion and salt erosion, and everything can do some damage. So here's the hypogeum, a picture of the hypogeum at Hal Sephliani. And interesting stuff here. I think she said that doorway doesn't really go anywhere. It's just kind of like there's these different levels, and I'll pull up a map, I think, as the next picture where it shows like the schematics of the hypogeum, which goes underground in Malta. And they say that the main chamber in the bottom kind of resonates at a certain frequency. There you can see, here's the schematics, and you can see how it's kind of laid out and how it goes down. There's like different levels.
Sweet.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to go down there and just like meditate, you know?
Absolutely.
I'll leave that up here for a second. But yeah, I just, again, we're just discussing all these sites. We haven't really... Other than talking about it with Laura, we've only really talked about Malta a few times on the podcast, but I do find it one of the more fascinating places in the world. So moving on, here we get to one of the more well-known ones, which would be Stonehenge, which is roughly dated from 3000 to 2000 BC. And I gave this overhead view because most people don't even know about some of these outer rings or these outer circles and some of the previous lead ups to some of these sites. They think, oh, it's just these stones, but no, there was previous sites at, you know, in some of these places and stuff. So there you can see the overhead there. Again, when I say roughly dated, people have different takes on this. I'm not going to get too worked up over the dating on these things because again, I've mentioned this in the past. Like we used to get caught up on like, oh, it's this old or it's that old or this thing's this old, or they say it's this old, but it's really this old, or things like that. But lately I've been thinking about it as if it doesn't matter how old it is, if it, you know, if it's interesting and there's, you know, it does matter how old it is. I want to say that, but does it matter?
Well,
it's in
like
terms
kind of a different topic altogether.
But what I'm saying is, does it matter to you? Like if you're learning about this stuff, can the site just be fascinating? Do you have to, like, does it being older mean that it affects your life today somehow?
No, the only difference would be if it was created like 50 or 100 years ago or something like that.
Well, yeah, or if it was created like thousands and thousands of years before they said it was, which is some of the paradigm shifting things that, you know, like the Göbekli Tepe. Göbekli Tepe's, 5,000 years, 4,000 years older than the Malta site. So, I mean,
Right.
that,
At
you
that,
know.
there's a point where you're splitting hairs
Right.
or stones, if you will.
There's a cool shot I think you would appreciate, Maurice. We got to start
Oh
sending you to some of these sites.
yeah. Drop me down and pick me up, baby.
Get you a little beret or a little hat.
I'm here for the stones.
Tam O'Shanter, you know, one of those Scottish, you know, I'm sure somebody in our family, one of our
Oh yeah.
Scottish gardener family members has one. We can load you up and send you over.
I know someone with a kilt, so I'm halfway there,
There
baby.
you go. This is a cool shot. I think you would like this because that's Comet Neowise. It's I don't know if it's like a composite or like artistic rendering, but
Yeah, you never know in today's world. It's
yeah,
hard.
because you take cool pictures though, where you have that time delay thing going on with the camera, where the water looks like it's moving, and you know, even though it's still, kind of a
Yeah,
thing.
that's just slow shutter speed, but that they have things now where you literally click this, you can pick a sky and click click and it's the best looking sky ever, where I'm sitting out there for hours waiting for the sky to turn.
Yeah.
But that's a different approach. I'm a naturalist. I like it's
Yeah.
maybe it's because I'm lazy and I don't want to mess around with Photoshop too much, but I think there's a level of reality to my photos. If you see the photo, yeah, I might bring up the pinks a little bit or the greens, but for the most part, it's kind of what I see with my eye, which I think is
Sure.
a cool trait to have. Otherwise, it's just like, is this guy on Mars when he took this picture? What's going on here?
Yeah, and look, I got to give you props. You know, I don't know how long have you been doing photography? Like 3 or 4 years?
Yeah, I've been messing around with the camera for probably five-ish, but until you
You
take
you've
something seriously, you really gotta
yeah, but you've
get
gotten
on
really
this
good.
thing.
I mean, I've been following some people on Instagram that have been doing it for 20 years. I think some of your stuff's better than that. So,
Oh, thank you.
keep doing it, and again, we'll send you out in the field. And actually, next
Yeah.
summer, I got to get you out here to the botanical gardens because I think you could do some real work there as well.
Beautiful zones.
Especially like some of the waterfalls and that Japanese rock garden and stuff. There's just tons of awesome places to take pictures there. So.
Yep.
Again, you have the Stonehenge with the backdrop of the Milky Way there. That would just be imagine like ancient times, just being out there, no
Yeah,
light
no light
pollution,
pollution. Yep.
no distractions, just laying out there, thinking, pondering. It's perfect. Perfection. So if you're interested in, well, this would be from Orkney Island in Scotland. We've had Laird Scranton on before, who's written some books on this topic, but this is Scarabray. It's roughly dated from 3180 to 2500 BC. And there's some speculation that maybe even the henge builders or the stone circle builders originated in Orkney, or they're up north there and kind of worked their way down. And you kind of see a progression, and even like Avebury or sites like that. So, and they're beautiful. I mean, that looks pretty. Imagine playing golf near there. That would be unbelievable.
Oh yeah, our cousin Rob would love that.
Yeah. Well, and that's part of some of our roots, as some of our family members are from there. So, not there specifically, but Scotland. Let's see here. This is just the interior of that shot. And Laird, when we've had him on, he goes into like the symbolism of how these structures are formed and how it's a little bit more complex than just thinking, oh, there's the hearth or there's this or there's that. Like it all kind of means something symbolically. So it's kind of interesting. I mean, we've probably done 5 or 6 episodes with Laird at this point. So he's got an
Yeah,
interesting take on
he's a vast knowledgeable man.
Maurice is making words up. And if you
Yes.
want yourself a hashtag Let Maurice Speak t-shirt, head on over to our merch store because I'm about to shut his ass down.
Ladies and gentlemen.
All right, so here we have Newgrange, which was dated to around 3200 BC. As you can see there, it's a pretty big structure. And I know that the sun kind of gets, you know, the sunlight and certain solstices goes through some of the doorways and illuminates certain things. Here, I'll pull up a... Here's some of those spirals. So doesn't that look pretty similar to the spirals that I was just pointing up, pulling up on Malta? I mean, a little different, yeah. But
yeah,
I mean, you have to think that there's something going on there that means something cosmologically, you know, they're understanding the solstices and, the different equinoxes and, yeah, I don't know. Just very interesting stuff. As you can see, I think that's where the sun shines in through there and then it illuminates stuff on the walls and stuff like that at certain times of the year. Again, we haven't gone deep on some of these. Like, we've gone very deep on Easter Island, very deep on Göbekli Tepe. We've gone very deep on ancient Egypt, which 4.5 will be the last megalithic part of this series, which will probably won't be for a while, but it'll be on ancient Egypt specifically, since we've talked about it so much in the past, and all those sites that we've discussed and stuff, and that'll be the last megalithic one. Then we'll move on to some of the other topics that are part of this series, but we've just covered so much content now. I mean, we're already up to episode almost 220, so we've covered a lot of territory so far.
Yeah.
Okay. Then you get to ancient Sardinia. The Nerogic age and the structures are dated to between 1900 and 73 or 730 BC. Okay. So this is kind of interesting. This is a tunnel found there, and it looks very, very similar to the Cyclopean tunnels at Tiryns, which is near the Mycenaean or part of the Mycenaean culture in ancient Greece. So again, some of these people had to have been in contact with each other, or just maybe a similar consciousness. But I do think that there's actual contact happening between these cultures, with just the similarity in some of the building structures and stuff. I don't think it's a coincidence. So again, very similar. You can look up the last episode we just did, 4.3. which we talked about ancient Greek megalithic structures and ancient Greek temples and the evolution of the building techniques. And if you look at the part where we talk about Tiryns and the ancient Mycenaean culture, you'll see some similarities there. This is St. Christina in Sardinia. It's beautiful. It's got almost kind of looks like a big keyhole kind of a structure.
Yeah, that's sweet.
Goes down. And again, shout out to Laura. I know she just went to Sardinia and took some pictures and did some stuff there. So that's awesome. And, yeah, again, here's another, Nuraghi structure. Looks like a sort of like a fort with like a tower. And you see all these circles. Yeah, kind of interesting.
Yeah, the last two pictures almost make me feel like I'm playing Zelda or something.
Yeah, it's classic.
Those steps going down in the world, in the down deep.
Yeah,
into the dungeons and stuff. Yeah,
it's classic.
Obviously, that stuff's based on reality.
Again, here you can kind of see some more of the foundation work there, and just the structures, and you have to wonder, like, what are all those? What are all the circular structures for? Are these, what are they, turrets or whatever, something? What are they for? You know, like, what was the purpose? So, welcome everybody joined. Welcome, Ryan. Thank you for joining. And here you have the Ziggurat of Ur. So this goes all the way back to the Sumerian stuff. This is roughly dated from 3180 to 30 or 2500 BC. And you can see the ziggurats and like the ziggurats are kind of the precursor to what you think about when you think of mastaba or even mastabas in ancient Egypt. So mastabas and ziggurats are where most archaeologists would say like the pyramid structures or pyramidal structures come from. This is like a progression in building is what they would say. So here you have the Ziggurat of Ur. This is probably the more recognizable ziggurat there is. And this one, I believe, is in Iraq, if I'm not mistaken. Let's go to this one. Here's another shot of it. You can see, look at that stairway there. That's beautiful.
Yeah, these are real pieces of art.
Yeah, I mean, and just think, this was new technology for the time, too. This was...
new technology and a lot of effort.
Yeah, for sure.
Because that doesn't come easy.
Yeah, and you're in the desert. It's got to be hard work. Here you kind of see like an ancient depiction of it when it was covered in sand and they had to uncover it. You know, you see a lot of these ancient depictions too of like the Sphinx or the pyramids of Giza when they were all covered in sand or half covered, or, you know, the Sphinx has been covered so many times and uncovered so many times. It's crazy to think about, but... And here you have like an artist rendition of the Ziggurat of Ur. This one is the Ziggurat at Choga, I believe. Choga Zambil. It's also known as Basket Mound, and it's dated to roughly 1250 BC. So this one looks a little different. It's kind of similar, but this one looks more of like a... I don't even know how to explain, like a fortress with like layers or something.
Uh-huh.
It just didn't... The other one, the Ziggurat at Ur, kind of looks more pyramidal. And maybe this one's just deteriorated a bit, but it looks like there's a lot of gap in between the levels. Here's another... Okay, so the ziggurats were built by the Sumerians, Assyrians, Babylonians, and Elamites. Here's another. You can see kind of where these quarries, I think those bricks that you're seeing, I think are like mud and clay bricks, I believe. I'd have to look that up again, but
that makes sense.
Yeah. And there you kind of see where they're getting that from. Okay. Here's a diagram of the different ziggurats. Kind of just like, again, little picture here. You can kind of see the overhead views and the structure layout and everything. And again, sorry if you're listening. I know this is a slideshow episode. We do have one more slideshow episode in the series, which will be 4.5, which we'll talk about ancient Egypt. But then from there, it'll be more just discussion-based. So, okay, now we get to some of the more controversial stuff. So you have... Gunung Padang in Indonesia, and there's controversial dating on this one. Some have dated it all the way back to 20,000 BC, which is super, super old. And then some people are saying, you know, it's more modern. It's 100 to 50 AD. And you'll see this with some of the other sites like the Bata Valley sites. The dating's controversial. Nobody really has a good idea of the dating on them. I forget the guy's name, but this guy named Danny, I think, is the controversial archaeologist. And I think Graham Hancock's talked about him in some of his stuff too. And, the thing that I find interesting about this site is actually the stones, the volcanic stones there look like they're similar to the Giant's Causeway in Ireland that have just been like separated and then realigned into megalithic structures or alignments. So I don't know if those were actually worked stone or if those are natural formations that have just been used for megalithic structures. I don't know if anybody's talked about that, but I find that interesting. Because you do see, you can look up, I don't have a picture of it, but the Giant's Causeway in Ireland, some people think it's like man-made, it's not, but I could see like finding a site like that that's volcanic and then chipping some of that off and then using it for these kinds of structures.
Yeah, when man and earth combine forces.
So some of them are like hexagonal, you know, that type of formation.
Yeah.
See, there's a better image. You can see what I'm talking about. They're like these pillars, and it's hard to tell, like, have they been worked or are those just similar to what I'm talking about? And then they were all then moved or used or quarried or something like that.
Yeah, plus certain stone will chip off into actual fragments that look fashioned.
Yeah.
So who knows? That is pretty sweet, though.
There's another picture you can see. So, like...
Yeah, that looks pretty positioned.
Yeah, I wouldn't say, like, again, I don't think that it's not, you know, that part of it's not man-made. I'm curious how it was quarried. I don't think that those were cut in those hexagonal shapes like that. I think that may have been natural, and then it was used to put something together. And yeah, so the other argument is that this is like the top of like some sort of pyramidal structure too. Like it goes down deep, and then there's like tombs or chambers down below this thing, supposedly. So,
oh, that's interesting.
Again, one of the more controversial sites. There needs to be more excavations and dating. And the guy Danny, the archaeologist that was working on it, a lot of people don't like his takes on it. So,
what are those little garbage cans in the side?
I don't know. It's a good question. Maybe it's just for people visiting there, throw stuff away or something. Yeah. Who knows?
Or it's a disc golf course.
Yeah, that's an ultimate disc golf course, if that's the case.
That would be incredible.
Interesting, though. So this is kind of what I was talking about, the Bada Valley megaliths. Again, similar... not too far in Indonesia, and some people would say that these sites are connected to some of the megalithic builders from Vietnam and Cambodia, you know, some of the ancient builders there. That's one of the speculations. I don't know what the more modern take is on it, but the datings and the origins of this specifically are unknown. Some speculate anywhere from 5,000 to 2,000 years old. Okay, now we get to Baalbek, Lebanon. So this is another controversial one. You have mainstream archaeologists saying that all this stuff is built, or the Romans built this stuff, in roughly around 27 BC. And there's the Temple of Bacchus, and you know, it's a temple. It looks similar to like the Parthenon and other sites, and obviously it's the Parthenon, they have some of these massive blocks at the base of there, so maybe that's the thinking behind it. You know, and then I think it's the Stone of the Pregnant Lady, I think is the name of this one. But yeah, I mean, it's one of the, again, a lot of this stuff, even though, again, it seems like it's set in stone, no pun intended, yeah, it's really not. Like, even if you look up like on Wikipedia, or you cross reference it to some of the books or archaeological sites or whatever, websites, you don't see like definitive answers on stuff. So when they get mad that people are like speculating or whatever, it's like, well, you don't have a clear vision for this either, so I don't understand the pushback.
Well, people gotta relax, that's the bottom line.
Yeah, that's
just chill out.
Yeah, the Stone of the Pregnant Woman. So there's these massive blocks, and the argument is it's similar to like maybe the unmoved obelisk in Aswan, Egypt. Like, how were they moving this massive stone, and what was it going to be used for? I think the thought is maybe this was going to be one of three stones used for a trilithon, if I'm not mistaken. So there you get a side view of it. And again, we're talking about the Roman Empire, so they did have a massive reach and stretch. But again, these stones do seem like out of place and a lot larger than a lot of the other stones that they used for some of these sites in the area. Heliopolis would have been the sites or the site. Here you kind of see the, some of the temple structures here. You're going to see what looks like, you know, very ancient Greek looking. We just did all the ancient Greek sites, and you're going to see kind of like an evolution of that in with the Roman stuff, as you can see here. So I would say that even if those stones are older, a lot of these other temples are obviously Roman or later than the Greek stuff. Here's the Temple of Bacchus. and you can see the Corinthian work up top on those pillars, if you remember our last episode. And again, you can see those massive blocks at the bottom. So I think a lot of people want to argue, how did they move it? What were they using to move it? So I think that that's the argument, is how did you move this massive, massive stone, or what was the going to be the point of using that massive, massive stone?
It's crazy.
Give you a little flower symbolism there. Okay, so this one is another controversial one. There's no dating on this one because I don't think it needs to be dated, and we're going to talk about that right now. So in the past, I'm trying to think, who did we discuss this with? We went deep, I think, with Dr. Gregory Little, actually.
Yeah.
Because we were talking about him when he went to dive off the coast of Bimini and look at, like, the Bimini Road and some of the more unnatural sight-looking sites in that area. I think that's even more... that looks more man-made than this to me. This, if you, and I'll show you a couple pictures after this. A lot of people want to believe Yonaguni in Japan was either a megalithic site or some sort of quarry or something like that. And I'll show you why I don't think that's the case in some of these next pictures. First of all, who's stepping up these steps? If this is just a temple or something, like, those are massive, like
the giants, bro.
Yeah. No, that's not the case. So, that's number one. And it doesn't look like it makes logical sense of, like, from like a building standpoint. So that's number one. You know, you could say, I've heard people say, well, maybe it's a quarry that was just around before the end of that last ice age. I guess I'm not opposed to that idea. Maybe it was above sea level and it was worked a bit, or people used chipped, you know, stone off and used it or whatever. But again, I don't think it actually served like a function from like a megalithic structure, temple standpoint, or anything like that. So this is what I was going to get to. So this is an outer overhead view of that area of Yonaguni. And you can see, look at that big rock to the left. See how it's chipping in layers like that?
Uh-huh.
And you can see the different like sedimentary layers.
Yeah.
Look at how all the stones are formed, and look at that little chunk out there in the water. It looks similar to that. I mean, and I think that I've seen a Japanese seismologist talk about how that area mixed with that type of stone can create those sort of formations via seismic activity and pieces of it chipping off and everything like that. So again, I know people want to be like, oh, it was man-made and, you know, it's incredible and whatever. I don't, as much as I like to believe some of that's, you know, some of these older dates and things are this or things are that, I think this is one where it's, to me, it's kind of a no-brainer. And even some of the, I think both, like, even like Graham Hancock and Robert Schock and even some of the more alternative people would agree that this is natural formation and not man-made. So
yeah, that's a good theory for sure.
Again, look at the stone. You can see how it's breaking off and how it's eroding.
Yeah.
Again, look at this. Look at these layers.
Yep.
You're telling me that looks human worked? It really doesn't. And again, this one. Like, what kind of logical sense does that make from like a building standpoint? And again, I'm not trying to debunk anything. I just like to look at these things using logic and reason, and I want to find the true mysteries out there. And I think there's things that can be deduced and taken out of that picture. So,
yeah, for sure.
All right. So now we get to the Sumerian, Babylonian, and Assyrian bas reliefs. Here you have the Apkallu. We'll talk about that in a second. A lot of people want to interpret these ancient Sumerian or Babylonian Assyrian deities as different things. There you have one of our old-time favorite topics, the ancient handbags. What were in the bags? You know what we're talking about?
Oh, yeah.
This kind of stuff. What was in the bag, you know? I think we talked about that. Who were we talking about it with? I know I've talked a little bit about it with... maybe it was Chris Bennett, the cannabis historian, but we were talking about like how those could have been canvas or cannabis, you know, like hemp bags that were made from, you know, the tree of life, which we'll get to here in a second. But yeah, you know, people have different takes. I know, I think Graham Hancock talks about how he thinks entheogens or psychedelics were in them, or possibly medicine. These were the doctors or medicine people of the ancient times.
Uh-huh.
So the Apkallu, which is the gods that you see depicted here, there are seven demigods that are sometimes described as part man, part man, part fish, or part eagle. They are associated with wisdom and are also known as the sages. The Apkallu were something between a human and a god, but post-deluge, the sages were referred to as humans. So after the Epic of Gilgamesh, they were then referred to as humans. Oannes, in the Greek versions, passes all the knowledge of the civilizations down to the people and taught the people the creation myth, the Enuma Elis. Oannes is Sumerian and Uana is Akkadian. Adapa was the name of one of the Apkallu, or another word for wise. So all this has to do with his wisdom and knowledge. These beings were carrying knowledge. So were these gods? Were they, again, where are these gods? No, but yeah. but for real, were they humans, or were they humans that just had special knowledge? Were they, or maybe they're just wise humans and knew a lot about stuff? Were they just made up gods, or were they, you know, because obviously there's the fish god, or the connection between the fish and the eagles as well. So there's a lot going on there, a lot to unpack. But you know, again, you have holding the pine cone. Some might even say maybe a cola, a cannabis cola. I actually, you know, when you see the tree of life, looks like maybe they're picking the cola, you know, from the tree of life, putting it in the bag. I think that's my take on it. Actually, it's not that crazy when you think about Soma. We've had Chris Bennett on and talking about cannabis and how there's evidence for ritualistic cannabis use, especially within Zoroastrianism and these cultures in ancient times in this region specifically. So I don't think it's that crazy of an idea, to be honest with you. Here again, you have Oannes with the part fish, or the, you know, part human. Again, with the handbag. Okay, so here you have that tree of life. So above the tree of life, you have Ahura Mazda, which is the god of Zoroastrianism. And then you have that tree of life there in the middle. And then you have, you know, some people have the pine cones in their hands. Some people, I don't know what they're doing with the other ones. And they all have those like bracelets or like watch looking things on that have either like flowers or maybe they're sundials on a wrist. I mean, who knows what those are? I've thought a lot about that too. Tried to speculate at least. But yeah, I don't think, I mean, it's really hard to tell because some of the images that are depicted, it's like, wow, that's really good artistic relief carving. But then you also see like things that don't look like human. Like, look at those calves. That doesn't look like a human calf. That looks like a robot, you know, Hulk's calf or something, you know? So
those are some good looking legs, baby.
Yeah, Johnny Drama would be all over that. Yeah, so then, but then you look at that tree of life, and I think, why not cannabis, or why not some sort of entheogen or something?
Yeah, for sure, I could see that. It has some of the traits.
Yeah,
even hops. Sure, they're yeah, the cousin of cannabis, so they're all intertwined.
Could be. And look, these, you know, the Red Bull gave these people wings, so maybe it was cannabis.
Yeah, caca.
Again, here's another one of the Apkallu. Each Apkallu has a pine cone or a cannabis cola in their hand, and then they have the handbag. Again, I would, if it's a pine cone and it's a bag and then it's the tree of life, there's no tree of life that size that has pine cones, so that wouldn't make sense from that standpoint. Are they doing something with the pine cone to like bless this whatever the tree of life is or something. I don't know. I've looked at these many times and I find it really hard to have a good take that really makes sense on it. And I actually, yeah. I'm working on a handbag Opklu t-shirt as well. So we'll have one of those designs in the
what about a handbag soon. Handbag? Yeah. Now we're getting in the Kramer territory here.
It's just handbag within handbags within handbags. there's a close-up of it. I mean, if anybody has a different take, leave us a comment or a message. I mean, I think that it does. I could see it being a pine cone, but even a pine cone has more of those symmetrical, I don't even know what they are, like leaves or like out shoots, sprouts. They're a little bit more symmetrical than that. Now, the reason why I say bud cola, because that kind of is what that looks like, especially yeah. if they weren't completely dialed in with the relief carvings back then. More Opklu. You can just keep going through these images. They're all over the place, and they obviously meant something important. Again, you have one Opklu holding the handbag with the pine cone or the cola. Then you have the middle one holding a goat. And then I don't know what those other things are in the other hand. It could be, I don't know, some sort of plant it looks like. I don't know what that could be. It's too pointy to be like an opium. Thing. Maybe it's some sort of other plant or grain or something like that. And then you have the guy at the end holding, it looks like a baby lion. Some people say, well, no, that's a giant holding, you know, a real lion. I don't buy that. It might be a baby lion that he's trying to tame or something, or domesticate.
Yeah, possibly.
Okay, now we get to more connection stuff here. Okay, so on the left you have the giants, these statues that are called the Giants of Monte Prama, and that's found on Sardinia, which is an island off the coast of Italy. In the middle you have Urfa Man, found at Göbekli Tepe, which is dated to around 12,000 years ago, or like 9700 BC. And then all the way to the right you have a cycladic figurine. Goes back to ancient Greece, sometime around the Bronze Age. And all three have similarities. So you have the Nuragic cultures from around 2000 BC, Urfa Man's 9600 BC, and the Cycladic figurine's got to be, again, somewhere between, you know, 2,000-3,000 BC probably. So what does that all mean? Why are they so similar? Is that just how artists depicted humans back then? I mean, the Urfa Man doesn't look too outdated, even though it's way older, right? The middle one?
Yeah.
So
I like the Cycladic the best.
Yeah, that one's the most artistic take, I think. But yeah, interesting connections. Here's a close-up of a Cycladic figurine head. Again, all you really have is the nose, and you have to imagine the rest. Kind of like the hashtag Let Maury Speak t-shirt.
Yeah. Plug it.
You have the Nuragic figurines on the left, and then the middle, the hunter, and then it looks like some sort of warrior in the middle. And then you have the Phoenician, and I show that because they're not like so similar, but they do have some similarities. And we know the Phoenicians got around a lot, and the Sardinians most likely got around. Anybody in the Mediterranean most likely had knowledge of shipbuilding and ability to get around. So this one we got to send Maurice to. It's not that far. He keeps bringing it up, so maybe when it comes time we can send Maurice to
keep out the path, and I Serpent gotta go Mound.
You should see if you can get some sort of license to run a drone too and get some drone
I don't
shots.
Need a license, bro. I'll just fly it.
Uh-oh, we got a real rebel.
Shoot it down.
We got a real rebel on our hands.
Yeah.
So this is roughly, okay, so this one was interesting. I was reading this. So this one's roughly dated from 800 BC to 100 AD, which is a long gap to not have any real answers of when it was created. So there's argument whether it was the Edina culture or the Fort Ancient culture. Now, we've had Dr. Gregory Little on, who's written the books on mound cultures and mound builders. And he we he did we did an amazing episode with him the last time he was on, where he went through all the ancient mounds, the main mounds in America. So if you're interested, go check that out. We did a Patreon with him too after, where he went more in depth on some of the stuff. But yeah, we did a great episode with Dr. Gregory on the ancient mound builders and all the different sites and everything, because he's been to a lot of them and has pictures and everything. So Machu Picchu. I know Maurice was actually, you were really considering going there, weren't you?
Yeah, I still would like to go there.
We'll send you there, and then we'll send you to the Amazon after for an ayahuasca ceremony, and we'll
All
capture the whole
right.
thing. So Machu Picchu is dated from 1420 to 1530 AD, which it seems like a lot older than I think most people would imagine Machu Picchu, even though there's been some recent articles saying that it's older. And then you have the argument that some of the structures up there do look like they're older than, like there was some sort of previous civilization there, or maybe some more ancient sites there under that was built upon or something like that. But yeah, the 1420 to 1530 AD is really not that old in comparison to a lot of the other stuff. I know it's tough though. Imagine getting all those stones up there. I know people that have almost fallen that have gone there, that the steps that, you know, the path that you take is very treacherous. So,
Yeah.
the Pyramid of the Sun at Teotihuacan, this is roughly dated to around 200 AD. That recent episode we did with on archaeology, the science news, the archaeological news, where we discussed they found those flower bouquets that were part of rituals. And then there's that secret tunnel underneath the pyramid that they found that leads to this area where they have like mercury, like a mercury lake with like fool's gold on the walls, and like looks like shimmering stars. It's supposed to be like some sort of miniature version of like Earth, you know, was down there, some sort of like, you know, maybe it was part of some sort of ritual, or they're trying to recreate the, you know, the world above, you know, almost like as above, so below type of a thing. So it's kind of interesting.
Interesting.
This one's pretty cool. The Church of Saint George in Lalibela, Ethiopia. This is dated from around 12th to 13th centuries AD. This is that church is one stone. That's one cut. It's monolithic, meaning that they cut everything away, and that's just one piece. They didn't bring blocks down there and put it all together. It was literally cut down from the surface, as you can see how it's cut down around it. So there's some temples in India that have the same thing, and I always find that stuff so fascinating because it's so. That's got to be so hard to do. But it's beautiful to say the least. And there's a bunch of churches in that area of Lalibela there, like a whole complex of stuff. So, and here you have the pyramids of Meru or Marie, Meruv, Marie, something like that. I don't know. Meroe. Yeah, Meroe, maybe. And this is dated from between 3000 BC to 3000 AD. This, what's being shown here, is the North Cemetery. Again, these were associated with, you know, the Kushite Empire, and these were funerary pyramids. And there's a bunch of them. There's some that are partially built, and some that don't have, you know, the come to an apex or anything like that. So it's an interesting site to say the least. But again, we haven't gone too deep on it. But, yeah, I don't know. We have one
Sweet.
more slideshow left in this series, and then we're going to get to some of the other more, you know, I forget what we have left. We're going to talk about some crazy stuff going forward, and I wanted to get a lot of this stuff out before we get to some of the crazy stuff.
Ray.
But to this point, I think part one, we talked about like ancient civilizations and ancient mysteries. We've got to some consciousness stuff and some of the other parts. We did talk about metaphysics and the nature of reality and stuff. And I think part three, part four started this megalithic site stuff that we've talked about in the past. So, yeah, I'm just trying to think what else, we have yet to get to. We did talk about gods and creators and that kind of stuff too. I think we still have to yet to get to more like the near-death experience stuff, psychedelics, philosophy, space-time, extraterrestrial, UFO stuff, and then the paranormal stuff. So we have some fun topics left in this series. And again, this is to look at how we thought about these things going in and how we think about them now. Some people might say that I've kind of gotten more... less mystical of a mic on it.
Oh yeah.
But I've just looked more into this stuff. And I think when you look more into this stuff, some things just make sense, right? Like you can bury your head in the sand and just pretend like evidence of stuff isn't out there, or you can really learn stuff and figure out what the true mysteries or what the true fringe things are. And that's all I'm doing. And I think that, yeah, again, I put the dating there. Like, some of those have wide gaps because I am open to alternative or older dates. But you have to show me more proof than what's out there because, again, I don't... Some of the alternative stuff, while it's interesting, like, there's some people that really think that Yonaguni was, like, a temple. Like, no, it wasn't. Did you see anything in there that resembled any sort of coherent building structure? I mean...
Nah.
Yeah, so... So it's stuff like that. So I just want to, like, again, going in, we might have, like, entertained that more. But at this point, it's like, again, we look at the origins of things. I cross-reference things. I'm looking at the alternative stuff, the middle stuff, the fringe stuff, and then the academic stuff. What are the scientists, the archaeologists, what is everybody saying? So you got to look at kind of the whole spectrum of things and then deduct what things could be real, what are possibilities, what are not possibilities. I mean, you know, we're going to get to the ancient Egypt one. There is physical evidence that points to water erosion around the Sphinx. So, I mean, you could debate that all day long, but there's that. You know, there are things, true anomalies out there. You know, I discuss all this stuff with ancient history criticisms. This guy on Twitter who runs that channel. And he's, you know, these ancient nubs. There's these nubs found at all these ancient sites throughout the ancient world. And, you know, scholars would say, oh, this is just, you know, the way that they lifted the blocks or whatever. But I think there's probably more to it. And the fact that they're found at all the sites kind of puts the idea that there was no communication between any of these ancient cultures, yet they all used a similar building technique. Like, that's some things just don't add up. So I do think there are true mysteries out there. But I also think that there's a lot of, like, BS, too. So I think that right now we're just trying to be as honest as we can, entertain everything, have a good time. But at the same time, you know, we're not here to just believe stuff just to believe. So
Right.
We've got work to do.
My man.
We've got work to do, baby. So I don't know. What did you think? What's your take so far?
I mean, those are of today's episode?
Yeah, just, like, everything we've been talking about, like, how we... I know you weren't as big into, like, the building of megalithic sites and, like, how they built things exactly and things like that early on, but, I mean, how do you think
about it? No, I mean, I might not be incredibly into how they built it, but I can definitely appreciate a nice piece of art and ponder about what they were there for and what they were used to enhance or whatever it may be. I like a lot of the theories about the pyramids and stuff. I like some of the stranger ones, but... It's always a fun quest to try and discover the mysteries and try and understand how they were built and what they were used for and things of that nature.
And so since we've been doing this, do you feel like you've learned, like, a lot more? And maybe, again, I think people associate taking, like, mysteries away as, like, taking something away from it. But I don't look at it as like that. I look at it as getting to what the true mystery of it is, as opposed to just having that whole spectrum of, like, nonsense mixed in there with it. You know, it just convolutes the, you know, the topic or muddies the waters or whatever.
Yeah, well, there's still a lot of mysteries that surround a lot of them, but
yeah, exactly, that's what I'm saying. But why people get wacky with stuff for no reason is what I'm saying. Like, there's no reason to jump to the most unreasonable conclusion when there's some other credible stuff that makes more sense than that. You just don't want to admit that that could be the case. You know, like I think that with all the fringe and alternative stuff, you have to be honest with yourself. If you want to entertain that stuff and read it or watch it or whatever, have at it. But are you being honest with yourself? Like, do you think that, you know, the mainstream or whatever could have something right, or it has something right? Like, you know, and that's going to be the case sometimes or most of the time. So I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you can look at all the dating that I just went through. A lot of those dates are very rough dating. They don't have an exact idea. And I think that in itself is part of the mystery of a lot of this stuff too. So
absolutely.
Just be honest with yourself and cross-reference things and stop with the crazy outlandish stuff that doesn't need to be there. And I think that you can get onto a path to greatness. No, I'm joking.
Wow, there it is, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm joking. And I look, I don't have any like special knowledge or anything like that, but I will admit that I've spent a lot of time researching this stuff. And again, if you start looking at the origins of things and how things come about, whether it's philosophy, science, metaphysics, whatever, if you try and look at the origins of things, you're going to start to build a pattern and like a habitual way of looking at things. And then that becomes just like a normal way of life for you. So you can kind of like, most people don't even take 5-10 minutes to look things up, yet they have a podcast. Like, how many podcasts have I seen where somebody has done like 100 episodes and they haven't even looked up stuff that takes like 10 minutes? It's really crazy that, you know, but again, I'm not here to talk shit or anything. I'm just saying, like, if you don't say you're after truth unless you're really after, you know, some sort of objective truth, if that exists. And we don't even know if it does, but if it did, that's how you have to go about it. So
yeah.
Anything else before we wrap it up here?
That's a good way to go out, my friend.
At the end of the last episode, we got into a real hot debate, Maurice and I, between what we were talking about, like the God, where are the gods? Where are these gods? And then Maurice's favorite, which was Xerxes, earthquakes, and fire.
That's like I said, to keep the shirts coming, baby.
How everything in Greece got destroyed, 480 BC. Xerxes, fires, and earthquakes.
Yep.
Maybe I'll make that a shirt too. I don't know. We're just going to have a million shirts.
Only
sold
hurt.
One of everything, but it'll be there just in case.
No, that's a million, baby.
Yeah. Well, again, this is the last live one we're doing for a while. We have a bunch of pre-recorded episodes with guests, which I think everybody will enjoy over the next month and a half. Again, I have a baby that's going to be here next week, so I'm not going to have a lot of free time at all. So again, I'm glad we got to pre-record a bunch of episodes. You'll see about one a week here through that process, and then hopefully sometime in the next couple of months we'll get back to doing some live shows. But we appreciate everybody's support so far, and everybody's been super awesome. Shout out to Sandy, Top Escapee, shout out to Cole, shout out to, and thanks for 4.5 Fingers for joining. Ryan, thanks for joining. Just everybody that's supported the show and been there. Martin and Sean, and just all these wonderful people, all the people on Discord, all the people that have joined our Twitter spaces, supported us through buying merch. Thank you, everybody. We love everybody. All of our Patreon members, we love you so much, and we really appreciate it. And before we get out of here, if anybody is interested, head on over to our Patreon at patreon.com/mindescapepodcast. For just $2 a month, you'll get exclusive guest episodes and segments. Tons of great stuff on there. I'm not going to keep trying to sell it, but just a bunch of amazing episodes and segments on there. And we are also on Discord, so you can go check that out. IndrasWeb.org is live. This is a social media platform we created to connect open minds. If you want to speculate, hypothesize, theorize, perfect place to do it. So head on over there, set up a profile. Still working on trying to get in the App Store. I will let everybody know when that happens. And if you are interested in winning this Mind Escape t-shirt, all you have to do is go to Apple Podcast, leave us a 5-star review, take a screenshot of it, and then email it to mindescapepodcast@gmail.com, and that'll enter you to win. We have a few submissions, so there's a chance you might win. And again, I want to keep plugging the merch store because I'm proud of some of the designs I've created in there. So I just created
beautiful
one with Anubis. And at the top, it says, "We are living, breathing magic." There's the Portara of Naxos one that I made. The hashtag Let Mori Speak. Hashtag Mystical Mike one I just added. There is a sale going on there as well. So if you're interested, go get that stuff while it's 30% off. We love everybody. Stay safe out there. And we'll catch you next time. Peace.
Peace.